Good morning and welcome to Claude Daily.
I'm Alex. It is Sunday, May 31st, 2026. And I have to tell you, this is one of those mornings where you look at your feed before you've even had coffee and you just kind of sit there.
Yeah, I was up at like 6:30 and I saw the numbers and I literally put my phone down and walked to the kitchen and came back and they were still there.
The numbers didn't change.
The numbers did not change.
$965 billion. That is the number. That is Anthropic's new valuation after closing what may be one of the largest single capital raises in the history of the technology industry.
$65 billion in one round.
$65 billion in one round. And in the process, they have leapfrogged OpenAI to become the most valuable artificial intelligence startup on the planet.
Which, I mean, when you say it out loud, it still doesn't feel real. OpenAI had been the defining company of this whole era. ChatGPT, the thing that started the whole public frenzy, and now Anthropic is just past them.
And that's not the only massive story this morning, because paired with the raise, and very deliberately paired, we should say, Anthropic launched Claude Opus 4.8, their new flagship model. Faster, significantly more reliable, cheaper in fast mode, and capable of coordinating complex tasks across swarms of AI agents.
And there's a full Mythos class model coming very soon, like imminent, so this is a big morning.
This is a big morning. We're going to go through all of it. The money story, the model, the technical details from the Claude Code release notes, what the community has been saying. So let's get right into it.
Let's go.
All right, the money first, because everything else kind of orbits around it. Anthropic has closed a $65 billion funding round at a $965 billion valuation. This is being reported by essentially everyone. Yahoo Finance, Al Jazeera, Gizmodo, MSN, Sherwood News. It is not a rumor, this is confirmed.
And Gizmodo's headline, I keep coming back to this, is just, Anthropic is now worth more than OpenAI. No hedging, no reportedly, just the fact.
Which it is. OpenAI's last reported valuation put them somewhere in the high 300s of billions. Anthropic at 965 has lapped them by a wide margin.
And what's wild is the trajectory here. Like, step back and think about this company's history. Anthropic was founded by Dario Amodei, Daniela Amodei, and several colleagues who left OpenAI in 2021. So we're talking about 5 years from founding to nearly $1 trillion in valuation.
5 years.
5 years to become the most valuable AI startup in the world. That is one of the steepest ascents in business history, not just tech history.
And to put the $65 billion number in some perspective, Al Jazeera described it as a dramatic ascent, which I think is actually underselling it. $65 billion is roughly comparable to the gross domestic product of a mid-sized country. It's more than the annual revenue of many Fortune 500 companies, and they raised it in one round.
Now, to be fair, and we should be fair about this, that's a reported valuation on private market terms. This isn't a public market cap that's been stress-tested by millions of traders. Private valuations are set through negotiation between investors and the company, so there's a different kind of scrutiny there.
That's right. The 965 is not the same as, say, Apple's market cap or Microsoft's. It's what investors agreed to pay for equity at a specific moment in time.
But even with that caveat, the fact that sophisticated institutional investors with armies of analysts are willing to price the company, there tells you something real about expectations for where this goes.
And where it's going is toward an initial public offering. Because both Anthropic and OpenAI are in what multiple outlets are calling an IPO race. Sherwood News framed this week's event specifically in that context. The $65 billion raise, the Opus 4.8 launch. All of it positioned as Anthropic asserting itself ahead of a public market debut.
And that framing makes total sense. If you're building a narrative for public investors, you want a clear arc. We are the most valuable. We have the most capable model. We are the most honest. And here is the trajectory. Everything this week feeds that story.
Every piece of it is deliberate.
Highly deliberate. You don't drop a $65 billion raise and a flagship model launch simultaneously by accident.
Now, there was one piece in the mix this week that I want to flag as a bit of a counterpoint to all the triumphalism. Derek Thompson over on his Substack had an essay called "The AI Boom Has Entered Its Weight, Is This Worth It?" phase. And I think it's worth taking seriously.
Yeah, I read that piece. And Thompson is not an AI doomer. He's not a skeptic in the dismissive sense. He's asking a legitimate capital allocation question.
The argument being, the AI industry as a whole has absorbed extraordinary amounts of capital over the past several years. Hundreds of billions in compute infrastructure, in data centers, in training runs. And the question he's raising is whether the economic productivity gains are commensurate with that level of investment.
And the honest answer is, we don't fully know yet. There are real productivity gains happening. Developers are faster. Analysts are faster. Customer service is getting automated. But at the scale of what's been spent, are we generating proportional economic returns?
And I think the answer Thompson is gesturing at is, not yet at this level of spend, but possibly soon. Because the specific things that have been holding back broader adoption, hallucination, unreliability, users not being able to trust the outputs, those are exactly what the new model generation is claiming to address.
Right, and if you fix those things genuinely and measurably, you unlock a whole category of use cases that have been locked out. Legal work, medical documentation, regulated industries where you simply cannot have a model making things up.
So the thesis is essentially, the spend is ahead of the returns, but the returns might be about to catch up.
Which is either a really exciting investment thesis or a really convenient way to justify any valuation you want, depending on how cynical you are.
Depending entirely on how cynical you are, yes.
I'm somewhere in the middle, cautiously optimistic with the receipts still pending.
That's a pretty good place to be. Okay, let's get into the actual model, because the financial story is interesting, but the technical story is where I think the real substance is this week.
Agreed. Tell me about Opus 4.8.
Claude Opus 4.8, Anthropic's new flagship. And the headline claim, repeated across Yahoo Finance, Tom's Guide, Sherwood News, Yahoo Tech, is that this model is significantly more honest, less likely to fabricate, less likely to, as Tom's Guide put it, fake answers.
Which is the nicest possible framing for hallucination.
The nicest possible framing. And the specific number that's been reported is that Opus 4.8 catches 4 times more mistakes than previous versions.
Wait, 4 times? That's not incremental, that's a step change.
That's what's being reported. And I want to be careful here because we'll get to how the community is scrutinizing this number, but taking it at face value for a moment, 4 times better error detection means you've fundamentally changed the reliability profile of the model.
Because the failure mode that has really hurt AI adoption in serious professional contexts isn't the obvious failure. It's not when the model says, I don't know, or produces clearly garbled output. It's when it produces something that looks completely right and is subtly wrong.
Confidently wrong.
Confidently wrong, which is worse than wrong because wrong you can catch. Confidently wrong gets past your review.
And Anthropic is specifically positioning Opus 4.8 as addressing that. Sherwood News' framing was interesting. They described the model as releasing alongside the funding raise as a more honest Claude Opus 4.8. And the word honest is doing a lot of work there because it's both a technical claim and a branding claim.
Right. Honest is a human value word applied to a technical system. And Anthropic has very deliberately leaned into that framing because it connects to their founding mission. Safety first, aligned AI.
Which brings us to the Mythos alignment quality claim. So Opus 4.8 is described as achieving near Mythos alignment quality. Let's explain what that means for anyone who hasn't been tracking this.
So Mythos is Anthropic's internal designation for their highest tier of alignment. Think of it as their gold standard, a model that meets the most rigorous requirements for truthfulness, reliability, and safety. Not just it usually gets the right answer, but it has a deep, consistent commitment to not deceiving users.
And Opus 4.8 is near that standard. Not fully there, but close. Close enough that Anthropic is comfortable shipping it as their flagship and letting it represent the company in high-stakes use cases.
And the full Mythos model is apparently imminent. CNET ran a headline. Anthropic says a Mythos-class AI model will be available soon. And that word soon is interesting. Not eventually, soon.
Could be weeks, could be months. But the framing is that Opus 4.8 is the runway and Mythos-class is the destination.
Which is a smart product strategy, actually. You ship the near Mythos model now, you capture the market, you let enterprises start building on it, and then you upgrade everyone to the full Mythos model, and the ecosystem is already there.
Rather than waiting until everything is perfect.
Rather than waiting, ship fast, upgrade in place, that's the cadence.
Now, the other major feature of Opus 4.8 is the fast mode pricing. And this is where the business case gets very clear. Fast mode is priced at $10 per million input tokens and $50 per million output tokens.
And what does that compare to in terms of previous pricing?
Approximately 3 times cheaper than previous Opus tier pricing. And at that price point, you're getting roughly 2.5 to 3 times faster output.
So faster and cheaper, at the same time.
At the same time. Now, there are presumably some trade-offs in the fast mode, whether it's slightly reduced capability on very complex tasks or some other dimension. But the framing is that for most enterprise use cases, fast mode gives you everything you need.
And for enterprise specifically, if you're a company deploying this at scale, you're running millions of inferences. The difference between $10 per million tokens and $30 per million tokens is not marginal. That is a real cost structure difference.
Potentially the difference between a project being viable and not viable.
Exactly. Or between deploying in one department and deploying company-wide.
Right, because at 3 times cheaper, you can justify a much broader rollout.
And faster response times also matter. 2.5 times faster isn't just about throughput. It's about user experience. If you're building an internal tool and the AI response takes 8 seconds versus 2 seconds, that is the difference between people using it and people giving up on it.
Latency is UX.
Latency is absolutely UX. People are impatient, me included.
And then the third big feature, the one I'm personally most interested in following, is dynamic workflows for orchestrating complex tasks across sub-agents. This is Opus 4.8's capability to coordinate not just one AI instance, but swarms of AI agents working in parallel on different parts of a larger task.
Okay, this is where it gets genuinely interesting to me from a technical standpoint, because the theory of multi-agent AI systems has been around for a while. AutoGPT was generating a lot of excitement back in 2023. Various agent frameworks have come and gone, but the gap between the demo and production reality has historically been enormous.
What's made it hard?
A few things. Coordination failures. When agents have to share state or pass information to each other, errors compound. If Agent 1 makes a mistake and Agent 2 builds on it, you get cascading failures that are really hard to debug. Context management. Each agent has a limited context window, and in complex, multi-step tasks, you run into situations where agents don't have the information they need. And then there's just the base reliability issue. If your per-agent error rate is high, running 10 agents doesn't give you 10 times the output. It gives you 10 times the errors.
Which is exactly why the 4 times better error detection story connects directly to the agent orchestration story.
Directly connected. If you've improved per-agent reliability substantially, you've improved multi-agent system reliability non-linearly, because errors don't just add, they multiply across the coordination layer.
And this is the capability that opens the door to a new class of use cases. Complex multi-step software development, large-scale research synthesis, enterprise workflows with a dozen interdependent steps and multiple external systems to coordinate with.
Things that currently require significant human project management to coordinate.
And that's the long-term vision. Not replacing human judgment, but handling the coordination layer of complex tasks so human judgment can focus on what it's actually best at.
Right. Delegate the orchestration, focus on the direction.
Before we move on to the technical details, I do want to mention one more thing from the news cycle this week. There was a headline making the rounds, very clickbaity title about GPT 5.4 having destroyed Anthropic's Claude. Capital D destroyed.
I saw that, yeah.
And I don't want to just dismiss it because the competition is real and GPT 5.4 is a capable model. But the timing of that piece, it almost certainly drew on benchmarks that were run before Opus 4.8 was available.
Almost certainly. And this is a perennial issue with AI benchmark coverage. The benchmark race moves so fast that something published on a Monday can be outdated by Thursday when a new model drops.
And the destroyed framing is a tell. Serious technical analysis doesn't say destroyed. Serious technical analysis says, outperformed on these specific benchmarks by these margins in these conditions.
Right. It's YouTube thumbnail language, which isn't meaningless. There may be specific tasks where GPT 5.4 outperforms Opus 4.8. That's very likely true in some areas. But presenting it as a comprehensive verdict misrepresents how these systems actually compare.
Different models have different strengths. The question for any user is which model is best for their specific use case.
And that's where third-party evaluations matter. Not the company's own benchmarks, not the clickbait comparison videos, real users running real tasks and reporting what they find.
And there's actually a lot of that happening in the community, which we'll get into. But first, let's get into the Claude Code release notes, because there are 2 weeks of detailed updates here that deserve serious attention. So we have 2 separate weekly release cycles to cover from the Claude Code platform. Week 21 ran from May 18th through the 22nd. And week 22 runs from May 25th through the 29th, which was this past week. Both are dense with updates, so let's take them in order.
And the code platform releases are where you get the real technical substance. The press releases tell you what the marketing story is. The release notes tell you what actually shipped.
That's exactly right. Week 21's headline feature is the general availability of auto mode for Pro Plan subscribers. And this one matters a lot for anyone doing serious agentic coding work.
Explain auto mode for people who might not know the product that well.
So historically, when Claude Code is running complex operations, especially multi-step agentic tasks where it's making decisions about your code base, it would pause and ask for confirmation fairly frequently. Hey, I'm about to do X, is that okay? And that's conservative and safe, but it creates a lot of friction.
You're in the middle of a big refactor. You've set up this complex task, and the model is pinging you every couple of minutes.
Right, it breaks your concentration. It breaks the flow state. And honestly, for a lot of routine operations, the answer is always yes, just do it.
Because you've already established what you want it to do.
Exactly. So Auto Mode implements background safety checks specifically for Opus and Sonnet 4.6 models. Those checks are happening, the safety evaluation is happening, but it's happening asynchronously. For operations that clear the safety check as routine, the model just proceeds. For operations that raise flags, things that are ambiguous or potentially risky, it surfaces to the user. Oh.
So it's not that the safety layer is removed, it's that the safety layer is now in the background rather than in your face.
That's a really clean way to put it. The safety is still there. It's just no longer a synchronous blocker on every operation.
And for a developer doing a multi-hour session, like building out a full feature set over an afternoon, the difference in cumulative interruption overhead could be pretty significant.
You know, it's funny. When you think about how we measure productivity in development work, one of the key metrics is time in flow state. And constant micro-interruptions are one of the most reliable ways to kill flow state.
Context switching has a real cost. Every time you have to stop and read a confirmation prompt, your brain has to re-engage with what the model is doing rather than what you're thinking about.
And multiply that over 4 hours of work, and you've potentially saved a substantial amount of cognitive overhead.
So auto mode is a productivity improvement even before you get to what the model is actually doing.
The other week 21 feature that stood out to me is the slash code review command. You type slash code review and it triggers a targeted analysis specifically for correctness bugs.
Not style, not formatting suggestions, not here's how you might reorganize this. Just correctness.
Just correctness. Is this code going to do what you think it does? If not, here's specifically why.
And I think the scoping there is really deliberate and smart because one of the failure modes of AI code review is that it gives you a wall of suggestions of varying importance, and sorting through them to find the real problems is itself work.
If everything is flagged, nothing is flagged.
Exactly. You end up ignoring all of it or spending more time triaging suggestions than fixing actual bugs.
Whereas slash code review says, I'm only telling you about things that will make your code wrong. Everything else, I'm not going to mention unless you ask.
That's a much more useful tool. And paired with Opus 4.8's improved error detection, 4 times better at catching mistakes, the slash code review command becomes substantially more powerful this week than it was last week.
Right, the command existed and got better simultaneously. Feature plus underlying model improvement.
And there were also per category controls added in week 21, the ability to configure essentially your safety envelope at a granular level. Different categories of operations can have different confirmation requirements.
So you could say, never delete a file without asking me. Always confirm before pushing to any remote branch. But for local file modifications in this directory, just go for it.
Which is how a smart developer would actually think about risk categories. Not all operations carry the same stakes. A destructive operation on a production system versus a local edit to a test file, those should have different autonomy levels.
And now you can actually configure that distinction explicitly, rather than having to work with a one-size-fits-all interruption threshold.
I want this. I want this right now.
It's already shipped in week 21, so you've got it.
Outstanding.
Okay, week 22 is the big one. The headline? Opus 4.8 becomes the default model across the major tiers. Max, Team Premium, Enterprise Pay-as-you-go, and the Anthropic Application Programming Interface tiers are all now running on Opus 4.8 by default.
No opt-in required. You woke up this week and your Claude Code was just better.
If you're a subscriber at those tiers, yes. And that means you're running at the fast mode pricing. $10 per million input tokens, $50 per million output tokens, and getting approximately 2.5 times the speed.
For developers who've been doing cost modeling on their Claude code usage, that's a meaningful change to their spreadsheets.
Very meaningful. And then the Big Week 22 edition is the workflow system for orchestrating complex tasks across subagents. This is where the Claude Code platform specifically becomes the production environment for the multi-agent capabilities we talked about earlier.
So let's get concrete about what this looks like in practice. If I'm a developer and I want to use the workflow orchestration, what does that actually mean day to day?
The picture I'm building from the release notes is that you can now describe a complex development task at a higher level of abstraction, and the system will decompose that task, spin up subagents to handle different components in parallel, and coordinate the results back together.
So instead of me managing the decomposition, saying, okay, first do this file, then do this module, then integrate them, the orchestration layer handles that.
The orchestration layer handles it. Your job becomes defining the goal and the constraints. The workflow handles the sequencing and parallelization.
Which is actually a significant change in the human-AI work relationship. You're operating at a higher level of abstraction.
And I think this is where the productivity story gets really interesting. Because a lot of the productivity gain from AI coding tools so far has been about individual task speed. You write code faster, you get suggestions faster. But the bottleneck for larger projects isn't writing individual functions, it's coordinating across the whole code base.
Right. The work of integrating things, making sure pieces fit together, managing dependencies between different parts of the project.
And that's exactly what the workflow orchestration is designed to handle.
I want to ask about the failure mode, though. Because the history of multi-agent systems includes a lot of cases where agents get into weird states, produce conflicting outputs, or run in circles. What happens when the subagents disagree, or when one produces bad output?
That's the key question, and the release notes don't fully answer it, which is honest, because this is new territory. What we do know is that the improved per-agent reliability is the foundation. If individual agents are less likely to produce garbage, the orchestration layer has less garbage to deal with.
Garbage in, garbage out, but at scale and in parallel.
Exactly. And the background safety checks from the auto mode work. That layer is presumably operating on the subagent outputs too, so there's error detection at multiple levels.
It's a layered system. You have the model's own improved error detection, you have the safety checks running in the background, and then presumably the orchestration layer has its own consistency validation.
That's the picture I'm building. Though again, this is early days and the real test is what happens when people throw serious production workloads at it.
The week 22 version numbers are also worth noting. They shipped v2.1.143 through v2.1.149 in a single week. 7-point releases.
7-point releases in 5 working days. That is a seriously fast shipping cadence. That suggests a team that is highly motivated, probably working long hours, and has a very clear release pipeline.
And when you look at the scope of what landed across those 7 releases, default model upgrade, fast mode pricing integration, workflow orchestration, updates to how agents coordinate, that's a lot of surface area per release.
It connects back to the IPO race story. When both you and your primary competitor are heading toward public markets, your internal velocity looks like a competitive asset. The rate at which you ship improvements is an argument investors make about your future value.
Ship history as a proxy for shipping future.
Something like that. And the Claude Code release notes, taken together over these 2 weeks, are telling a coherent story. We are building the infrastructure for serious enterprise agentic development. We are shipping it fast, and we are integrating each layer, reliability, speed, orchestration, safety, into a unified system.
And the timing with Opus 4.8 becoming the default this week ties it all together. The platform features are better because the underlying model is better. And the model is better in exactly the ways that matter for the platform's use cases.
All right, let's see what the community has been making of all of this, because Reddit has had a lot to say. So Reddit had 37 items flagged in this week's coverage, which is a significant volume and reflects how much this community has been chewing on the Opus 4.8 launch and the valuation story. And I think it's worth spending real time here because the community analysis is often more rigorous than the press coverage.
The AI-adjacent subreddits attract people who actually use these systems professionally. When they push back on a claim, it's worth paying attention to.
Let's start with the valuation discussion, because the reaction there was interesting. The dominant thread was essentially $965 billion. Okay, that's the number. But what are the revenue figures, and what does the path to profitability actually look like?
Which is the right question.
And this is where I think the community's skepticism is well placed, because valuation is a function of expected future earnings discounted back to present value, plus a lot of narrative. And the AI sector specifically has had a persistent problem where the narrative has been very strong and the current earnings have been relatively modest.
The compute costs alone are extraordinary. Training frontier models at this scale costs hundreds of millions per run. Inference infrastructure at the scale Anthropic is operating, that's a continuous massive expense.
And several threads made the point that $65 billion is genuinely a lot of money in absolute terms, but relative to what it costs to stay competitive at the frontier of AI research and deployment over, say, a five-year horizon,
it might not be as much as it sounds.
The runway question is live. And the honest answer is that the public financials aren't available in detail, so the community was doing a lot of triangulation from industry estimates.
Which is the situation you're in with private companies. You work with what you can see, and you model the rest.
One thread that got a lot of engagement was specifically about the more honest AI and four times better error detection claims. And the community's reaction there was healthy skepticism about the measurement methodology.
Right. Four times more mistakes caught compared to what baseline? Measured how?
The critique was, AI companies have very strong incentives to present their self-reported benchmarks in ways that make improvements look as large as possible. Not necessarily through dishonesty, but through choices about what tasks to test on, what models to compare against, what metrics to prioritize.
And this isn't just cynicism. This is a well-documented pattern. Every AI company announces the biggest improvement ever measured, and then third-party evaluators find a more nuanced picture.
The community consensus was, I'll believe it when I see it in my actual workflow, which is the correct epistemology. Don't trust the press release, use the model, measure the results yourself.
And there were a lot of people doing exactly that. Early impressions threads were active.
Early impressions were mostly positive, especially on two dimensions. First, coding reliability. Multiple people reporting that Opus 4.8 writes code that actually works in cases where previous versions would write plausible-looking code that had subtle bugs.
The confidently wrong problem.
And several people specifically tested it by asking it to implement things they knew well, functions in their domain of expertise, and checking whether the output was correct. And the reported hit rate was higher than with previous versions.
Which is the right test. You need to be able to evaluate the output yourself to catch errors. If you're asking about something you don't know well, you can't reliably assess whether it's right.
Second dimension, where people reported improvements. Long-form factual writing, complex technical documents, research summaries, domain-specific explanations. People who know the material saying, it got the details right in ways previous versions didn't.
And this is where the four times better framing might actually be doing conservative work. Because if you're writing a 10,000-word technical document and you go from, say, five factual errors to one factual error, that's a big quality difference, even if the raw numbers sound modest.
Document reliability at that level is actually quite meaningful for professional use.
Lawyers, doctors, engineers, researchers, these are people who can't just rely on output that's mostly right.
Mostly right is not good enough in regulated professions.
Mostly right will get you sued.
Accurate. Now, the thread that I found most technically interesting was the one specifically dissecting the multi-agent workflow orchestration. And the community there had seen enough agent frameworks to be appropriately cautious.
What was the concern?
Several related things. Context management across agents. How does information flow between subagents, especially when the information is complex and the subagents are running in parallel? If Agent A and Agent B are both modifying the same conceptual component of a system, how does Opus 4.8 handle that?
Race conditions at the AI level, which is kind of a wild concept to be worrying about.
It really is. And the second concern was, what happens when subagents produce conflicting outputs? Not errors, just different valid approaches to the same problem.
The model has to adjudicate between two things that are both technically correct, but structurally incompatible.
And the counterargument from people who'd been experimenting with the beta was that the orchestration layer is apparently quite good at identifying when parallelism is safe versus when tasks are actually sequentially dependent and routing accordingly.
So it's not just run everything in parallel. It's analyze the dependency graph first and then parallelize what can safely be parallelized.
Which is much more sophisticated. And that's actually the hard part, the dependency analysis. Figuring out what order things have to happen in and what can be done simultaneously is non-trivial even for experienced developers.
If the model can do that dependency analysis reliably, That's genuinely valuable.
The verdict in those threads was, early impressions are promising, reserve judgment until there's more production data, and watch closely for the edge cases.
Which is exactly the right framework.
Now I want to spend a minute on the legal technology angle, because there was real discussion in the legal tech community about Anthropic's legal plugins, which LawFuel covered this week.
Yeah, this one is interesting to me specifically because legal is such a clear test case for the reliability story.
The history here is important context. In 2000, Sawainea, 23, a lawyer submitted a brief to a federal court that cited several case precedents, cases that ChatGPT had completely fabricated. The cases didn't exist. The lawyer faced sanctions.
Mata versus Avianca. It became the cautionary tale for an entire profession.
And that case set the terms for how the legal profession thinks about AI reliability. If a model can fabricate court cases with complete confidence, you cannot use it in any context where legal citations matter.
And you can't have an AI assistant in legal work that you have to fact-check every output of, because then you're just doing double the work.
The value proposition of an AI legal assistant is that it saves time. If it creates a new time burden of verification that's equal to or greater than what it saves, it's not useful.
So the reliability threshold for legal AI is much higher than for most applications.
And Anthropic's response to that is essentially, we've built purpose-built legal plugins, and we have a near-Mythos model with 4 times better error detection. The reliability profile is different now.
The Reddit and legal community reaction was split, from what I saw. Paralegals and legal operations folks were genuinely excited. They've got massive document review workflows, contract analysis tasks, research projects, all of which are extremely time-consuming and where AI assistants could save substantial billable hours.
But practicing attorneys were more cautious. The bar rules around competence create real professional liability if you're over-relying on AI that makes errors.
And the bar rules haven't caught up with the pace of AI development. The guidance is still pretty murky on when AI assistance becomes problematic reliance.
Right. And the attorneys who were skeptical were saying, I believe you that the reliability is better. Show me 2 years of case studies from big law firms using it on matters that went through full review and found zero AI-generated errors, and then we'll talk.
That's a reasonable standard. Trust but verify, and the verification period is just longer and legal.
The exciting thing is that the conversation is happening at all. 3 years ago, most law firms weren't having a serious internal conversation about AI integration. Now it's a live question at almost every firm of any size.
The question has shifted from should we consider this to how do we implement this safely?
Which is progress.
And if Anthropic can make the reliability case convincingly enough to get trial deployments at a handful of large firms, the resulting case studies will be more persuasive to the rest of the profession than any press release.
The proof of concept matters more than the announcement in this sector.
Totally. Okay, one more Reddit thread I want to flag. There was a really engaging discussion specifically about the Mythos class model announcement and what people are expecting from it.
Yeah, the anticipation there was real. People are genuinely excited, but also a few folks raising the more thoughtful question of what Mythos class means for the capability profile.
Right, because Anthropic's founding premise is that you can build more powerful models and more aligned models simultaneously, that safety and capability are not fundamentally in tension.
Which is a specific theoretical claim that not everyone agrees with.
And it's a claim that gets tested harder as you push toward more powerful models, a model that's dramatically more capable and dramatically more aligned. What does it do that current models can't? And are there new risk categories that come with those capabilities?
The AI safety community on Reddit takes this seriously. They're not dismissive. They're not alarming. They're asking the questions that Anthropic's own safety research is trying to answer.
And the community's position was essentially, Anthropic has the most credible safety evaluation process of any frontier lab. But the details of what the Mythos safety evals look like are not public, so independent verification is limited.
Which is a tension that isn't going to be fully resolved by more press releases.
It requires time and demonstrated performance, which is the answer to a lot of questions in this space.
True across the board. Okay, I think we've covered the major threads. Let me try to pull this all together before we sign off.
Yeah, let's synthesize.
So here's my read on the week. Anthropic has had what is objectively one of the biggest single weeks of any company in AI history. Not hyperbole, $965 billion valuation, $65 billion raise, flagship model launch with measurable reliability improvements, a faster and cheaper deployment mode, new agent orchestration capabilities, a full Mythos class model teaser, and a platform that shipped 7 releases in a single week.
And every piece of it fits together. The valuation is high because investors believe the technical roadmap is real and the IPO story is imminent. The technical roadmap being real means Opus 4.8 has to deliver on its honesty and reliability claims. Delivering on those claims opens enterprise markets, legal, finance, healthcare, regulated industries that have been locked out by hallucination concerns. Those enterprise markets are what justify the near $1 trillion valuation on the path to a public offering.
It's a coherent story. Whether it's a true story, whether reality matches narrative, that's what the next year of enterprise adoption will reveal.
And Derek Thompson's "Is this worth it?" question is the right metaframe for that revelation. At the level of capital investment the AI industry has absorbed, the productivity returns need to be real and measurable. The thesis is that the reliability improvements we're seeing this week are the specific developments that unlock those returns.
4 times fewer errors is the unlock for legal. Agent orchestration is the unlock for complex enterprise workflows. Fast mode pricing is the unlock for broader scale deployment.
And the Mythos model, whenever it drops, is supposed to be the capstone. The model that definitively demonstrates you can have high capability and high alignment simultaneously and deploy it in production.
I'm watching the Mythos release more closely than almost anything else in AI right now, because that's the claim that's been hardest to make stick across the industry. And if Anthropic actually delivers it,
it changes the conversation. Not just for them, for the whole field.
For the whole field. And on the competitive side, GPT 5.4 is a real model making real claims. The race is tight. The destroyed framing is clickbait. But the underlying competitive tension between Anthropic and OpenAI is genuinely fierce, and it's going to intensify as both companies get closer to their public market debuts.
Which is ultimately good for users. Both companies are shipping at an extraordinary pace. Capabilities that would have been considered futuristic 18 months ago are now in the default model settings.
And the transparency question keeps coming up. Not just from AI safety advocates, but from enterprise buyers, from lawyers, from anyone who needs to trust these systems in high-stakes contexts. The honest AI framing that Anthropic has leaned into is smart not just as branding, but as an actual product strategy. The companies that win enterprise AI are the ones that earn trust.
And trust is built by showing your work, by being clear about what the model can and can't do, by not overselling and then under-delivering.
And by shipping Claude Code updates with real release notes that tell you exactly what changed and why.
Exactly. The documentation matters. The specificity matters.
All right. I think that's the week. Big one for Anthropic, big one for the field. We'll be watching closely to see how the Opus 4.8 reliability claims hold up under real production load, and absolutely watching for the Mythos model drop whenever that comes.
And if you're a Claude Code user, seriously, go read the week 22 release notes if you haven't. The workflow stuff especially is worth understanding in detail before you build on it.
Good call. That is going to do it for this morning's Claude Daily. I'm Alex.
I'm Sam.
And we'll be back tomorrow morning with whatever the world has decided to throw at us between now and then. All the details we covered today, the Opus 4.8 launch, the Claude Code release notes, the Mythos announcement, all of it is available through Anthropic's official channels. The engineering blog, the product announcements, the Claude Code documentation, it's all there if you want to go deeper.
And if you've been using Opus 4.8 since it dropped, particularly if you're testing the error detection or the agent orchestration stuff in real workflows, we genuinely want to hear what you're finding. The press release version of a model and the production version of a model are sometimes quite different, and real-world signal matters.
It really does. Have a great Sunday, everybody.
Stay curious, stay skeptical, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.
See you then.